and welcome to this Property Life podcast brought to you in partnership with Property Wealth System. I'm your host for today, Sarah Blaney, and I'm joined by co-host Nick Claydon. We are both trainers for Property Wealth System and co-hosts of this Property Life. Today, we are chatting about some of the questions that have been brought to us in recent weeks by some of our coaching clients. Nick, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm very good, thanks. It's been a while since we've sat down together and talked about all things property. So no, it's good to be back. So for all our regular listeners, we have had a little bit of a break just while we've been opening some fairly time intensive businesses, which we are going to talk about loads as we go into some new sessions. And also we've just been having a bit of a refresh of the podcast and a bit of a redesign going forward. So look out for some great new content as it's coming. But today, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the questions we've been getting over the last few weeks. And there are quite a few consistent ones that we do get quite a lot. And there will be further episodes on Q&As. So do please get in touch with us if you do have some burning questions that you want to ask, and we will cover as many of those as we can over the coming weeks. Our aim with the podcast is to help anyone getting involved in property to get started. For some people that may be a bit further down the line, give you some really great content on strategies and kind of things that our team is doing. To also answer your questions. So there's going to be lots of great content coming.
There certainly is. And to go straight into the Q&A, Nick, one thing that I've experienced quite a lot on some of the one-to-one coaching that I do and have done for the last few years is that when people are first starting out, or they've progressed slightly and they need to leave slightly more money in deals because of the way the market moves, they're often looking at, I guess, making extra revenue, additional income streams whilst building the portfolio. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. We sort of call it a side hustle, don't we?
We do. Yes, I'm not sure whether we like that term, but we'll use it. We'll go with it.
I think everyone knows what a side hustle is, but sometimes, you know, those side hustles become, really important revenue streams and actually can help transition people away from, I suppose, the lifestyle, a working lifestyle that might not suit them or that they might not be aspiring to at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah. And the great thing about property is it does lend itself to, you know, lots of different side hustles. There are things related to property that you can do or become an expert in a property related side hustle. So let's go through some of the things that that our students have done and our clients have done over the years. The first thing that springs to mind for me is for those of you getting started in property is to not just get totally focused on one thing. So if you're looking to build, you know, a buy to let portfolio, or if you're looking at incomes, you know, income producing properties, don't forget you could also flip a couple on the side to bring some money in. You don't have to be exclusively, I'm only doing this one thing. Do look for those extra opportunities. Now, you know, flipping a property isn't quick cash, but it can be regular cash if you build it into your strategy. You know, so I'd always recommend the coaching clients I work with is to at least try and flip one or two properties a year whilst you're building your buy-to-let portfolio. Always just keep an eye on that. I think, you know, who doesn't want 15 to 20,000 pounds dropping in a couple of times a year into your accounts? You know, it's a great way of adding some extra cash.
Happily, I think that that trading, that flip strategy as a complementary to building up a hold portfolio is, well, it's what we talk about anyway with having two exits. So most of your property portfolio, you know, you should be looking at it with a main exit, but also a secondary exit. And, you know, it is totally complementary to it. And it can help you build your portfolio quicker because the price sensitivity on future projects might be lessened slightly because you might have an additional 5K or 10K to leave into a project.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it can mean the difference between, you know, getting your next buy to let of the line and not, you know, if you've got an extra bit of cash to leave in, you're not, you know, you're not as rigid on that. It must be, it must hit these numbers. You know, you can be a bit more flexible. So, you know, I think this probably is the biggest challenge I think I get with particularly new entrants into the property game, and it is a game, is that they are, can be a little bit rigid on, it has to hit these particular numbers. And, you know, my question is back to them as always, well, fast forward 10 years, is that $5,000 going to matter? Probably not, but you'll have had that property for the last 10 years.
And exactly.
It's generating the equity that it's generated. So is he, you know, I do see it quite a lot, is, you know, the new entrance into it, do get fixated on it has to hit these exact numbers. And as much as I love it too, the real world doesn't really work like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think sometimes it can be a little bit of a blinkered approach, probably born from a position of a little bit of lack of confidence, and a bit of fear, which is absolutely natural and something that we, you know, we all experience and we all come across every day. But I think, yeah, you're right in saying, well, flip forward 5 years. Do you want that house in your portfolio? Is it something that you, you know, would look great in your portfolio in 5 to 10 years? Would you be thankful that your earlier self bought and purchased that property? And generally, if the answer is yes, then you need to find a way to make that work. And, you know, something like flipping properties is something that can help you just overcome some of that price sensitivity that you have.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. All right. So what are some of the other things that some of our students have done over the years?
Following on from sort of talking about trading properties and flipping properties, one of the most important things when you are looking to flip or trade is that you need to sell quickly. So you're not always holding out for the best price, but you're looking for a quick sale to get out of the deal and get the money into your bank. And one thing that helps really well with that is staging, and, you know, the design of the property. Targeted obviously towards who your client buyer is at the end. But I think, you know, staging and interior design is definitely something that if you have a strong passion for that, and not everyone does, not everyone has the, you know, we can all make our homes look lovely and whatever, but some people have a real flair for the creative and making the best of a space. And I think that that is definitely a side hustle that some people can look into. I was helping a coaching client a couple of weeks ago to set up her staging business. And so we wrote a business plan and went through and, you know, just really realistically decided, well, what could that add to her monthly income? Did she have the time and the skills for it? And then we wrote a business plan around that. And it's a really interesting one for people that are interested in design and staging.
Yeah, I think you touched on a key point there. It's got to be a passion. You know, side, if you do a side hustle, it's no point doing something that, you know, you don't like. I think, you know, there's been quite a lot of, you know, research and lots of books written on this in how to, you know, add income streams, et cetera. I'm not going to go into huge amounts of detail on it, but, you know, there's got to be an intersection between something that you enjoy doing, something that you have a skill set at, but also something that you can monetize. So there's got to be that, you've got to find that sweet spot. You know, think back to your Venn diagrams at school. You've got to find that sweet spot of, you've got to be able to make money doing it, you've got to be good at it, and but your key is you've really got to enjoy it. Yeah, so, you know, that could be as simple as having a dog walking business on the side. You know, you love animals, you've got some time, there's a need for it, and that's something that's a simple one, you know, and it can go from that to something like, say, becoming a bookkeeper for property investors. This is one that one of my coaching clients a while ago did. Came from an accounting background, she had two young children, didn't particularly want to go back to work in a big accounting firm, was doing property on the side and understood the problems that and challenges that we have as property investors. And that gave her that extra bit of edge in terms of being able to set herself up as a bookkeeper for property investors. I don't know about you, Sarah, I know you probably are very good at this. I'm definitely very not good at this. Bookkeeper. You got to be on it, you know, and it's something I want to actually learn. There's a lot of systems out there that can help you, but you still got to actually do the nuts and bolts of getting all the information in the right place and knowing what information is important, what isn't, and all these things. So yeah, so one of my clients from a while ago, that's what she did. She set herself up as a client, as a bookkeeper for property investors. Started off local, but then, you know, realized it don't have to be local. You can do that for anybody, wherever they are. And made a really good business out of that because she enjoyed numbers. She didn't like working for a big firm, but she did actually enjoy numbers and, you know, doing spreadsheets and things. And she had the skill set. She had the time as well. And, it, you know, property was a passion, so she could mesh all those things together. So that was one if you got that skill set.
Definitely. And I think those ancillary services that property investors need is a natural place to start. So if I think back, you know, I think 3 years ago, I was on a field mentorship with an amazing couple from Wales. You know who you are because I'm sure you're listening, guys. And the wife of the couple, amazingly organized person, worked in an administrative role for a big corporate in Wales. Absolute passion for organizing and, you know, data management. And I said to her, look, I just really, really want you to set up your own VA business, so a virtual assistant business, and focus on property because this is now your new life. You're now a property investor. And since then, Nick, I have to tell you that they have built a really good portfolio that you know who they are. They're extremely active in Wales, yeah. Fantastic people. And she's just about to launch her VA business focused in towards property investors. So it not only creates, I guess, flexibility in her and Alex's lifestyle in terms of timings and, you know, when they're available to do things and a time off that they might have together. But equally, it puts her more entrenched in the property world. So she's now talking to investors and, you know, and just opening doors to different discussions where you never know where they're going to lead. You might find future business partners as well as clients, you know, future property deals, future angel money. It just opens so many doors, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Just got to be in it. Yeah, the more people you talk to, the better. Yeah, we do say it quite a lot, talk to people, but that is key. It is what you have to do, you know. But you got to love it. That's the thing. And that's the passion's got to be there. You know, if you're not passionate about property, you've got to find something about it that you are passionate about. So, you know, I'm not passionate about interior design for sure. You know, when we were designing the hotel, that's not me. I can't do that. And I don't really have any passion for that at all. But when it comes to the operation side of it and looking at, you know, building essentially a consumable business or a consumer business in property, then that, I'm in. You know, I'm definitely all over that, and I love that. I'm passionate about that, and systems particularly. So you've got to find something that you are passionate about, for sure. And then find a way to monetize it. You know, so another one could be, you know, we had a couple of our students and clients over the years who have been architects, for example, have come from an architectural practice, same kind of thing. You know, architectural practices cover all sorts of things, but if you can be a niche, you know, produce drawings for property investors doing HMOs or hotels, you know, you can set yourself up as that niche person for that business. You might be passionate about property and, you know, the architectural skills that you've built up over the years. And is there a monetizable solution there? Yeah, of course there is. People will pay for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, every time we've spoken about different scenarios of side hustle or just creating extra revenue for yourselves in property, the one thing that we've both said all the time is the passion aspect. You have to have a passion for it. And if I was to think of one person within our property wealth system training mentorship group who is passionate and has really made a success of doing a complementary side business, it would be Andrea, who deals with a lot of sourcing up in sort of Nottinghamshire, Derby area. And her passion, I mean, if we talk about passion and what you're good at, going out, talking to people and finding deals, that's her happy place, isn't it? And she built her own big portfolio already. But her and her son are now doing an amazing sourcing business because she just loves it.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I remember the at the summit when we did a Property Wholesale Summit last year. Yeah, we teach everyone to go out and build your funnel and view lots of houses and put lots of offers in. And I think there was, we had 120 people in the room and asked, you know, right, so who's got 20 offers out? Straight away, Andrea was up there, you know. Of course she was, you know, because she loves it and she's passionate about it. So yeah, it's got to be, it's you've got to find that passion. So don't try and do something as a side hustle that you're not really that bothered about, or you're not, there's no passion there, because it just won't happen, basically. So a one for me was, as I built up my experience in property investing, was to, you know, go down the coaching and mentoring route. That was a passion for me and still is, you know. So that is a side hustle. You've got to obviously have walk the walk first. You can't, you know, I have seen people try and set up coaching businesses without, you know, the background really to do it. You've got to have the skill set there. So that's, you know, that Venn diagram again of passion, skills, and something you can monetize. But if you have got the skills and you have got the experience and the passion, then, you know, the people want coaching. They want to be helped. They want, need to be mentored. You know, we're just putting feelers out at the moment for business mentors at a high level. You know, you always need mentoring. But that's a passion of mine. So yeah, we've got many stories of how, you know, coaching and mentoring people in property over the years, from, you know, just provides, you know, that warm fuzzy feeling, gives you that, you know, that bit of extra, you know, you're helping somebody. But you know, it is a business, and it is something absolutely that you can earn from and monetize.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd concur with everything you've said there. You know, I've been coaching, I guess, in property, and wider business and strategy, which is something that I really love as well, to bring that kind of that business side of things and the strategy and systems in. And you know, we've been, like yourself, been doing that for a number of years now, and it is highly rewarding. And you learn, and you know, I learn each time I go out in the field with someone as well. So it's a win-win, isn't it?
It is, so, you know, some of our best strategies that we do in property have come from actually being out in the field, many
Yeah.
generally, you know. Think back to HMOs that I did, that came from being out in the field and seeing something that was going on in a city that I wasn't investing in, hotels, same thing. So yeah, it just, you know, as well as being passionate about it, it does provide opportunities, as we've seen. So yeah, it's
Absolutely.
coaching, that's another one there. Business mentoring, you've kind of touched on, because you do all sorts of things. I know in the kind of business mentoring world, Sarah, so you're particularly, you do love a spreadsheet, and you do love a system.
I do. True. Because that's my little happy place. Yeah, we've all got our strengths and weaknesses, haven't we? And I'm definitely big on the systems, big on the software, technology and all that sort of stuff. But strategy, I guess, basically.
Yeah, and again, that's a passion. It's a skill that you have, and it's a monetizable skill. Yeah, and there's always people that do want and need that.
So wherever you are in your property buying world, you know, if you do have things you want to change up, start to look at your key strengths, look at your time available, think of that Venn diagram that Nick's described, you know, of the expertise, the passion, the time that you've got, and where side hustle could fit in, and actually that could become something that grows arms and legs and develops into something that could change, you know, the path of where you're going.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, on a practical sense, if you need a bit of help with this, just start writing a list. Anyone can write a list, you know, three headers. What's your skills, you know, and think about everything you've done. You know, be creative. Think about, you know, if you're in a working environment at the moment, what are the skills that you have in that workplace? It could be soft skills, could be, you know, hard skills, particular things that you've learned, or people skills, all those kind of things. Write it all down, get it all down there. Yeah. You
But
know, keep
just start.
a long list. Then have another list. What are your passions? What are the things that you know, divert your attention, you know, when you should be working? You know, what are the things you think about? What are you passionate about? Make another list of that. And then try and kind of cross-reference those and think about, okay, well, what am I good at? What am I passionate about? What will people pay me for? That's the key bit. Yeah, it's got to be monetizable. So try that. Go and write some lists, give us some feedback, let us know how you get on with that.
Fantastic. Okay, so our next discussion topic, I suppose, our next question is around, we've had it, we get it all the time. People start to feel a bit stuck, and they've tried a few things, and it's not gone exactly to plan. And how do they pick themselves back up and start moving forward?
Yeah, no, this happens a lot. It's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to you, Rick, as well. You can come to a point, no matter what you've done, you come to a point where it's like, okay, what next? How do I, you've maybe had a couple of knockbacks. I mean, we've had recent, clients of ours, coaching clients of ours, that, something hasn't quite worked out. They got gazumped on a deal, or they missed out on a deal for a couple of grand, something like that. And it seems to kind of really knock the confidence. And I'd say that, first thing is make sure you've got the right mindset. There's not everyone has the right mindset all of the time. Okay, that's important to, I think, acknowledge. But I listen to a lot of podcasts. I read a lot of books, and I listen to a lot of stories. If you listen to anyone that's ever been successful in anything, they will have had serious knockbacks. But it's about then picking yourself up and getting going again. I think, if you do feel stuck and you feel a bit overwhelmed and think, how do we start? The best thing we can possibly advise is go and view some houses.
It's getting back on the horse, isn't it? And just getting out onto the streets and viewing houses, talking to agents, immersing yourself back into the world of property.
Yeah, and it's something that anyone can do. There's no one out there that's interested in property that can't go and view a house. Just go and view it. Even if, I see a lot of over-analysis going on, but it's the action of actually just being out in the market, talking to people in property, agents, homeowners, whatever. Just get out there, view some houses. You never know where that's going to lead, and it can just ignite that passion again, because you might just see something that you remember all your training, and you think, right, okay, yeah, maybe not this one, but I've just met that agent and they might have something else. And that's how you start just building it again. I think, when Carol and I were looking at getting into commercial property in Edinburgh, there's loads of challenges there. No one knew us in that world. But what do? We just thought, well, let's just book some viewings. Cool. Okay.
Where it goes.
That's what we did. Just book some viewings. Think about what's our general strategy? We did this with warehouses, we did it with hotels and commercial buildings, all sorts of things. We viewed so many things. But it's just being out there and doing it, doing the legwork. And at least, it just gets you energized again, I think.
I think a lot of people, when they start to get overwhelmed, it's that they've started to move outside of their comfort zone, and something will come along and slightly derail them. They just jump back in. They jump back straight to where it's comfortable, where it feels safe. And that is very normal. We all do that every single day, I think. And it is about just those little incremental actions that will push you every so often just further and further and further, so that the comfort zone starts to get larger. And things that used to feel uncomfortable are no longer. And I think also just maybe thinking about some of the things that could derail you in advance and what you might do about them. So that if that thing happens, you've already got one foot forward. So for example, we've both spoken about, different coaching clients who have had an offer that they were quite progressed with that's was the one, it was their one and only deal. And then someone or comes along and gazumps, or the buyer pull the vendor pulls out for whatever reason, somehow that deal falls down and they just rush back to the comfort zone. Whereas perhaps what they should have done is keep the pipeline going, so that if that one deal that everything relied on does fall over, it's okay. We always know there's another deal around the corner.
Absolutely. And I think, if you, especially if you've got like maybe some negative people around you looking for you to fail, Okay, looking for you to fail is probably a bit harsh, but you know, ready for you to fail, I think. If something goes wrong, it's very easy to just jump back and say into your comfort zone. That's why it's called a comfort zone, it's because it's comfortable and we feel safe in there. But we all know, you know, that that's not going to get you anywhere, really. It will just get you what you've already got, you know. So if you want something different, you've got to do something different. You got to find, I guess, the fire. You got to ignite the fire, haven't you? You've got to create a bit of attitude of, well, okay, I'm going to show it. You know, I'm going to do this. Like, I've had a knockback, but all right, let's go again. You know, just pick up the phone, book another viewing. Simple as that. It sounds really simple, and it is really.
It is, yeah. And you know, there's other things you can do as well. So I think, you know, the bookings, booking viewings, talking to agents, get to a networking night. You know, find out the networking nights in your area, where you live, where your investment is. You know, a few of our guys run some amazing networking up in Nottinghamshire and in Coventry, down in Surrey as well. Get to something and talk to other people, because as soon as you're back into the world and the people that are working in property, a door will open and you'll suddenly just be going off on your merry way again, you know, feeling far more energized.
Yeah, and you've got to remember why you started in the first place. You know, there's a reason that you started. So you've got to, find the fire and the passion for getting out and getting over all these obstacles, because I wish I could say there aren't any when you get more advanced, but, you know, the obstacles just get bigger. You've got to find that fire. Yeah.
And I guess being connected to why you're doing it as well.
Yeah.
The true reason why you're doing something, because I think everyone starts and goes, well, I want to be making loads more money. I never think that's the reason why people do things. The money is the enabler of the final goal, which is often around time and choice, I guess. So you have to really connect with why you're doing, why you're putting yourself through more hours of work in your day when you might potentially already have a full-time job and a young family and all the other responsibilities that life throws at us. Why are you doing it? Because if you don't know that, the first hurdle that comes along, you are going to, you know, trip up and fail.
Yeah, it's going to be too easy to just go, well, that didn't work. Okay. So let's just go back to comfort zone and keep doing what we always did. But we know that's not going to get you where you want to go.
Yeah. Or you get distracted by a shiny penny. And my goodness, there's a few of those around.
Yeah, well, that's another question, isn't it? So what do I, you know, how do I avoid the shiny pennies? We've all seen them, you know, the derelict house on the street or the derelict, you know, chapel around the corner that, you know, you've got your eye on and, oh, this could be something good. They're there to distract you. And, you know, they can seem like the deal of a lifetime, the deal of a century. But, yeah, you know, that's where the kind of strategy comes in and where maybe working with a coach or a mentor is going to help you, because they're going to keep you on the straight and narrow. They're going to keep you doing what you should be doing and keeping you on the path to where you want to go. So there's a lot of work that I do, particularly with my, you know, coaching clients and mentees, and anyone that's seen me on some of the courses that we run, you know, is really linking that why, the vision, what is the real vision? And I could talk for hours on that. But it's got to be really clear. The clarity of vision will be there, and then you've got to connect everything else to it.
Yeah,
and that keeps you on track, because then you can ask yourself, well, is that, you know, derelict chapel around the corner, if I do, you know, me pursuing that as a deal, is that getting me closer to that vision, or is it taking me off on a tangent?
Yeah, and I think we've all been down those rabbit holes, haven't we? And they can be quite fun sometimes, but ultimately you come up and go, well, it was an enjoyable time looking at all of that and researching this and dreaming that, but where did it get me?
Probably should just go and buy some houses.
Yeah. Do you know what? I find a really good system to try and focus your mind, because I think we are, because of the way that life is now, it's very busy and we're distracted by an awful lot of things. The 12-week year is, for me, a really nice way of focusing yourself, for an intense but short time period on one thing. And it gives you the knowledge that, you know, in another 12 weeks, you might have a different focus. It's likely to be very complementary and as a sidestep to the original, but it gives you that kind of get out clause of, okay, well, this is my focus for now. It doesn't mean that I don't have another focus, you know, in a few weeks, rather than trying to do all things at all the time.
Great, I love that. So how do you get involved in doing that? How do you start with that?
I mean, the 12-week year is a book that you guys can download on audio or you know, get an old-fashioned hard copy, but also on their website they've got an awful lot of resources, and it basically on the premise that if you're given a year to do something, when do you think you start do it? Right towards the end of the year, because you're given too much time, and it doesn't allow you, I suppose, to just really focus and plan on the actions that are actually going to make you achieve that goal for that 12-week period. So we're just splitting your potential yearly actions into a 12-week period. It's intense, it's focused, it's very much on small actions. So if, for example, going back to what we said about if you've lost your mojo and you're feeling slightly overwhelmed, then what should you do? I want to go and achieve so many viewings per week. To achieve those viewings per week, what am I going to have to do? Break it down even further if you need to. I'm going to have to look on Rightmove. Right, I'm going to spend 20 minutes a day looking on the online portals. I'm going to spend 10 minutes a day rigging agents. It's half an hour. Half an hour goes in the blink of an eye. Everyone has that time available, but at the end of the week, you're going to have, you know, 15 viewings for the week after that are of quality.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like, do you want to watch an episode of Corrie, or, you know, go and get some houses to view, get yourself back on track. So yeah, it's about making those choices and, you know, having a system and a platform to do it, a structure, but, you know, doing it. And I think this kind of goes back to something I was going to reference earlier, which is the whole, you know, getting over the feelings of overwhelm and being stuck, comfort zone is, you've got to try and make it fun, right? You've got to take it seriously, but have some fun with it, because property is a bit of a game, can be a game, you know, can be a bit intimidating when you start going out and meeting agents who you think are these all-knowing people. But actually, when you actually go and just talk to people, and actually you'll find that a lot of them are probably just going through the motions of their jobs. They're just in a job like anyone else is in a job. So, you know, go and talk to people, have fun with them, you know, and make it enjoyable. I think that is, everyone gets a bit too serious, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you got to
go back to my earlier point, have a passion for it and yeah, make it fun.
Yeah. As I said, take it seriously. This is, you know, the property to get, you know, where you want to go in property does take serious amount of work. You've got to take it seriously, but you definitely have fun whilst you do it.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, we've covered a couple of big topics there.
Yeah. There is one that I was going to suggest, Sarah, which is, I get asked this a lot, and it's something that we probably touched on some of the recent podcast episodes. It's probably something going forward, I think, we're going to talk about a lot on the podcast, is what would you say is the most important personality trait of a successful investor?
I think, you know, it would be no surprise to anyone to know that I'm going to say resilience, because whilst we haven't spoken that word yet, the whole episode has been building. It's been building to being resilient. And I think, you know, what we've said about connecting with your why, having a clear action plan, having a focused step-by-step of what you're going to do helps you build resilience and move in that comfort zone further and further out. So it's a bigger and it's in a different place. You know, you will look back and you'll be amazed at what you could have achieved and what you have achieved.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, to help build resilience, you know, I I think personally, I like hearing other people's stories. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of, you know, certain podcasts that, you know, I'm listening to Diver CEO, High Performance Podcast. And, you know, some amazing stories. And sometimes you'll come across a story, you picture someone who's like really successful in their field. And then you hear the real story and you just understand just how much they had to go through to get there. And you'll almost always find that they had a major, major setback or multiple setbacks that they then had to overcome. One of the ones that really stuck with me, actually, is Gary Barlow. Take that.
Yeah.
Well, everyone's going to listen to the podcast episode he did. I'm happy to promote other podcasts, by the way, on the High Performance Podcast. Listen to the Gary Barlow episode. What he had to get through and overcome to get back to where he is now is just incredible. So you talk about resilience, what he had to do, you know, he had to do it all publicly. He had to come over these major setbacks, do it publicly. You know, most of us, fortunately, we don't have to do it publicly, but there are always going to be things that happen that will knock you back. It's unrealistic and naive to think you can become a successful property investor without having some major setbacks. They're just constant. They're always there. They're always going to happen. So it's going in eyes open, knowing that this can happen, and, you know, to build your own resilience around it, and to say that, like, I'm expecting things to happen. We always say, well, you know, expect the worst, but hope for the best. Yeah, and that's probably a good mindset to go in with. You know, expect that things are going to go wrong, but sometimes they don't. That's okay. You know, but if you're expecting,
enjoy the moment that don't go wrong, because as sure as anything, there will be some time that it does fall over slightly, I've read Gary Barlow's biography, and an incredible what he has gone through at all levels, mentally, professionally. You know, one thing that I suppose that has been helpful for him, and one that we can all learn from, is having strong people around you as well. So don't be an island on things. You know, resilience is something that you can, I guess, feel from other people. You can feed off of other people's strength and their belief in you as well.
Yeah, and I think it's like a muscle that you can exercise.
Yes, yeah. Million.
I think the more you expose yourself to potential things that go wrong, the more resilient you become. It's putting yourself out there, knowing that it's not all going to go swimmingly. It's not all, you know, cupcakes and rainbows. There's going to be times where it's tough, and you're going to need, you know, to call on those reserves of resilience that you've built up. But certainly being around positive people is really, really helpful, which is why, you know, having a peer group or a mentor or coach you can work with, really important. You know, going to networking events, talking to like-minded people. You know, these are all really, really important things that can help build your resilience, because you can, you know, we're very open, you know, ourselves and with property wealth systems, stuff that we do. You know, we're very open about it in terms of, you know, it doesn't always go perfectly. In fact, I don't know a single deal we've ever done that's gone perfectly. You know, and we tell you how it is, you know, but we help you overcome any problems that you have and build that resilience. It is a muscle that you can exercise and build, I think. The more you do things, it's all about that taking.
You fall back on the experience of, well, when I felt like this last time, what did I do? And, you know, if it was, okay, well, a funding problem, then what I did was I picked up the phone and spoke to XYZ and got more answers and more information, which would help me through this. Or if it was that, you know, pipeline fell over, what did I do? I got back out and I did viewings and I spoke to people and I connected and I went to networking. And it is that resilience comes from experience, but also, you know, the mindset and the people that you surround yourself with. But yeah, I love the fact that it's that it's like a core muscle that you just have to tap back into, and show you, you know, how you coped last time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, just going, you know, relying on your, it's kind of, you know, you go back to your skill set as well. You know, what works, exactly you said, yeah, what worked last time? What are the skills that I have to overcome this? So, you know, we had it last year, you know, just about to complete on a project and one of our angels pulled out. All right, okay, setback, potential nightmare scenario, got the agent ringing every 5 minutes, when are we completing? And you're like, well, okay. So what do you do? You know, you rely on your muscle memory. It's like, okay, right, this has happened before. So what did I do? Right, get back out there. Let's go back to our angels list. And, you know, we'd replace that angel within, I'm not even joking, it's like a couple of hours, 2-3 hours. Because we had the experience and we went back and what did we do last time this happened? Oh, we phoned all our existing angels, as you know, and had a conversation with them. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, so
people that don't have the experience, tap into those that do. That's, you know, what we do that all the time. When I don't have the knowledge or the area of expertise, I talk to someone else within Property World system, or, you know, in Property World, to find out what happened there and pick someone else's brain.
Absolutely. So that's probably a good place to end. So I think we've covered quite a lot there. Great to speak to you again and relaunch our podcast. As I said to everyone, look out for great new content coming up in the next few weeks. We're going to do more Q&A sessions. If you do have questions, do connect with us. You can find us at propertywealthsystem.co.uk. You can find us on our personal Instagram or LinkedIn pages. And do connect with us. Do tell us, give us some feedback. Tell us what you want to hear from this podcast. And if you've got questions, you know, do let us know so we can build that into the next episodes.
Absolutely. And if you've got a great story within property that you want to tell, then, you know, please do get in touch with us. This Property Life. My LinkedIn is probably the best way to get hold of me. So if you just search up Sarah Blaney on LinkedIn. Nick, for yourself, best way.
Yeah, LinkedIn, just Nick Clayton, LinkedIn, or my Instagram, which is Nick Clayton, Nick_property. Connect with us there, yeah.
And we look forward to bringing you more episodes of This Property Life as we go through.